From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Today we'll be devoting the entire hour to our climate. This comes as NPR is working on an entire week of climate-focused programming. That's starting next week. And those conversations, like ours, will focus not just on the problems that stem from global warming, but also what's happening with the search for solutions to those problems. A little later on the show today, we'll be talking about climate-resilient housing and the difference that can make in reckoning with global warming, especially as heat becomes a more frequent and extreme danger in the Midwest. But we start today with the summer that's just passed. It was a wild season for the weather, not just in Illinois, but around the world.
The heat dome that has caused record temperatures in the Southwest is now shifting toward the Midwest.
Record keepers say the last 3 weeks have been the hottest ever recorded on Earth.
Two separate wildfires now raging near Athens in Greece. Authorities say strong winds are fanning the flames. The country's meteorological service has warned of a high risk of fire as Greece recovers, of course, from the heat wave.
People in New York City masking up again. Not because of COVID, but due to harmful smoke wafting into the city. Right now, New York City is among the top five most air-polluted cities in the world.
Another derecho in the Midwest, almost 3 years after the one that we saw in eastern Iowa. That is a look there in Illinois earlier today after this derecho barreled through the central part of the state.
We're now seeing flows in the Colorado River that we've never seen before since records were kept. This is due to two causes, reductions in precipitation and increased air temperatures.
In Italy, authorities issued extreme health warnings for 16 cities, saying that even hotter temperatures are yet to come.
This is not normal. I don't remember such intense heat, especially at this time of year.
Not normal, but is it the new normal? Heat? Drought? The derecho? And let's not forget that terrible crash of more than 70 cars in a dust storm on Interstate 55. The weather was among the biggest local and global stories this summer. What made it that way? And is this the sort of weather, or I should say, is this sort of weather becoming our new normal? Joining us to help us make sense of it all is Andrew Pritchard, meteorologist for Illinois Public Media, our home station. He's also an agricultural meteorologist with Nutrien Ag Solutions. Andrew, welcome back to the 21st Show.
So happy to be here.
Trent Ford is the Illinois State Climatologist, and he'll be with us throughout the program today. Trent, welcome back to you as well.
Hey, good to be back, Brian.
Listeners, as ever, you can join us at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Andrew, basic question. In the spirit of Seinfeld, what is the deal with all the heat and crazy storms we experienced this summer in the Midwest?
Yeah, listening to all that, it certainly was a busy and sometimes frustrating summer here in the Midwest. And, you know, as we talk about a summer that was very hot and dry for a lot of it, this was really in the face of a forecast that had us thinking it would be a stormy summer across the Midwest. So, you know, what happened? It's kind of a long story. And we start with, you know, why do we have weather? Why do we have seasons? And, you know, that reason being, we live on a globe and it's tilted on its axis and it's heated unevenly throughout the seasons. And so the jet stream, which is what drives the weather that we experience across not just the Midwest or North America, but the entire globe, the jet stream is what helps us to kind of balance out temperature gradients. What I mean by that is when we have areas of very cold air, areas of very warm air, the jet stream gets stronger and it works to balance that out. The jet stream in the atmosphere, it doesn't like to be out of balance like that. So as we come out of the winter into the spring and then eventually into the summer, you know, we've come out of a period where the North Pole has been in, you know, total darkness. It's very cold up there. Meanwhile, at the equator, it's still very warm and tropical. So that's why we have a very strong jet stream typically during the spring and the summer months. And you know, that's why we typically are more active and see storm systems impacting the area. Now, we're learning more and more about how the ocean and the ocean temperatures, how the ocean communicates with the atmosphere, and then how that impacts the jet stream, both the shape, the behavior, the intensity of the jet stream. And really, the buzzwords over the last few years have been La Nina and now El Nino. As we come out of a three-year run of La Nina and now into El Nino, these are two very different contrasting ocean patterns across the equatorial Pacific that have big impacts then on the different weather we see across North America. Now, as we talk about El Nino, everyone has its own flavor, but typically we see a stronger subtropical jet stream. And what I mean by that here is we have really two different jet streams that typically impact us here in the North American continent, and one of those being the polar jet, and the other one is the subtropical jet. The polar jet focused a little further north, the subtropical jet a little further south. So when we see that stronger subtropical jet stream in an El Nino, we typically expect a more active weather pattern, more storm systems, more precipitation. So that was what we were seeing in the forecast as we came through April and May. We're seeing an intensifying El Nino. We look at years past, a lot of the data suggests that we're going to be a little bit stormier across the Midwest. And what happened was we did get that stronger subtropical jet stream. It was very active and stormy, but it was not over us. That was because we developed a blocking pattern across the eastern half of the country and really going into the Atlantic Ocean. So we had this very strong jet stream. It was loaded with storm systems, but they were essentially blocked from coming into the Midwest, and they were forced off to the south. So as we started to really develop some drought across the Midwest after a lot of hot, sunny days stacked on top of each other, that really starts to evaporate the moisture out of the soil. At that very same time, parts of the southern U.S., from Texas into Mississippi, you know, Louisiana, were dealing with a ton of severe weather. This is somewhere that, you know, is not typically dealing with summertime severe weather, but, you know, they were setting records for 5-inch hailstones, you know, breaking hailstone records in May and June across that part of the country. And so, you know, we know that as we went deeper into the summer, the jet stream did lift north. It, you know, the drought ended with a bang with that June 29th derecho, but that was really essentially what it came down to was, you know, we're always looking at different ocean temperature patterns and how those are going to impact the jet stream. And it was just that what we thought would happen did happen, but it was displaced several states south of where we thought it would be. So we did not have the flow. We did not have the jet stream. We had no storm systems. And so we were left with sunny, hot, dry weather.
Yeah. And I think the big connection there, though, to think about is the way ocean temperatures half a world away, or at least a quarter of a world away, depending on how you measure, can still affect our weather here on the prairie. Trent, let me bring you into the conversation now, because, you know, as we've been reflecting, it certainly felt like we had a lot of extreme weather moments this summer, right? I mentioned that the dust storm, the derecho, the drought, the heat waves. But you wrote at the start of this month that at least in terms of temperature, this season actually wasn't really one for the record books. How do you draw that distinction between individual weather events and what's happening in the bigger picture?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, that when we take the average summer temperature, so June 1st through August 31st, the average temperature was just slightly, and I'm talking tenths of degree Fahrenheit higher than the 30-year average of the normal. And so I think that's actually more of an issue with how we represent those averages than it is with the heat that Andrew had talked about and you led this segment with. And what I mean by that is that, you know, this season being a case in point, we can have these two or three really intense acute heat wave events that cause some pretty significant impacts across Illinois. But then in between, we had relatively mild temperatures. And it was actually the beginning of the season, we had a weird phenomenon of kind of a cool drought where a lot of June was actually a bit cooler than normal, but we just weren't getting rain, like Andrew mentioned, so we still get into drought. So I think this is one of those things where there's a bit of dichotomy between how we represent an average, like a season average, and how we represent extreme heat. And a good example of how we can still get really impactful extreme weather, even if the overall season, the summer season, isn't all that extreme. Same thing we happened in winter a couple of years ago, where it was mild for most of the season, and then we got a big snowstorm through central Illinois, and it completely changes. It doesn't change the average, but it changes sort of how we experience that season.
I mean, is this a version of that thing where you take 10 people in a room and then Bill Gates walks in and suddenly everyone's average net worth is $10 billion or something like that, where you have these distorting events? Or I guess it's the opposite of that, right?
The extremes aren't being captured.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, sort of lying by numbers here when we say, oh, this summer wasn't too bad. Well, no, in fact, we saw some incredibly intense, in some cases record-breaking, heat index values for multiple days in a row in late August and again in late July. But when we take the cumulative effect of all of the days where we didn't have those, the average doesn't look nearly as intense.
Andrew, you would write a weather roundup for Smile Politely, which is a news site with the spirit of an alt-weekly in Champaign-Urbana. And when you wrote about this past summer, you mentioned that it was a period of very low predictability for weather forecasting. And you touched on some of that, but what made forecasting so difficult?
Well, yeah, we really go back to, you know, coming through May into the beginning of June. And I touched on this a moment ago, you know, as we meteorologists, you know, we rely on computer simulations, these weather models, and they're wonderful tools. But, you know, they struggle as you get further out into the future. And a lot of times they have climatology kind of built in. So what we were seeing is, you know, we're looking out 2-3 weeks into the future. The weather models are all saying, hey, yep, El Nino is going to kick in. You know, we're going to have this real strong jet stream flow coming in across the Midwest, and you're going to have active storm systems. And then, you know, we're kind of trying to convey that information. And what would really happen is we'd get 10, 14 days into the future, and that push of jet stream winds, that particular storm system is now, you know, we're starting to see that eastern blocking pattern starting to show its face again. It's not really going to break down. And this storm system will also, you know, be going off to the south. And so we really started to get frustrated as the drought began to build across the region. We started to deal with some of the impacts from the wildfire smoke. You know, there's this day where we're starting to develop a 3 to 4 week long drought. I'm getting frustrated with the, you know, the forecast busts in the 1 to 2 week time frame, and then all the wildfire smoke comes in, and I'm like, the sun can't even shine bright enough to give us shadows down near at the ground. And so, you know, I really hit a bit of a mental low there. And, you know, that's part of, you know, some of these, you know, La Nina and El Nino, and there are other ocean patterns here. When some of these flare up, it can really play as a wild card in our weather forecast models. And, you know, there's a lot of different directions things could go based on how, you know, one domino falls or another domino falls. And so, you know, as I mentioned there, the models can sometimes throw their hands up and say, well, we know we've got El Nino here. Here's what El Nino typically looks like in 2 weeks. And so you have to ask yourself, you know, are we really finally going to fall into a typical El Nino pattern and get the rains to come in? Or is this just another mirage? And, you know, is this just another a situation where the weather model really has no clue? So the more moving parts we throw in, the more these weather models can struggle, and the more that meteorologists have to kind of just rely on pattern recognition and their own intuition there.
Trent, we talked earlier this summer about the drought that farmers were facing in Illinois, and we talked on the show today about that. How have things changed for agriculture? What's the outlook now?
Gosh, it really looks, it depends on where you're at. And it depends is always such a terrible, terrible answer to things. But, you know, we got some good rain in right around the 1st of July. Things were looking really bad, 2012-esque, when we think back to the last major drought year in Illinois. And then we got some good rains across much of the state in early and mid-July, and then another kind of bout of pretty active wet weather in early August. And then the taps really shut off, and we've only had a few places that have picked up a significant amount of rain since then. So, you know, things are looking a lot better than they were just a couple weeks or a couple months ago. And, you know, seeing combines out harvesting pretty much all across the state now, with this little bit of drier weather, just hearing that it wasn't, it ended up not being as bad of a season for agriculture as it may have looked like. I think there are people who will still be hurting, and there may be some folks who did surprisingly well. But overall, the rain in July and then again in August was ideally timed to kind of stave off a much worse drought situation. Now, I mean, of course, I'm sure all of you have been probably following the news coming out of New Orleans right now with the saltwater intrusion into their municipal water supply system. Even though Illinois has gotten a little bit of help from rains in July and August, much of the Midwest overall, especially the Western Midwest, Iowa and Missouri did not get that relief as much. And that's really taken a toll on the flow in the Mississippi and the Ohio rivers. So we're, you know, in Illinois, we're doing a lot better than we were. We're still in kind of this long-term drier period over the last couple of years. And certainly hydrologically, when we think about the big rivers, there's still a lot of work to do over the winter to get us out of this kind of deficit.
Absolutely. And I just, you know, observationally, I was on a bike ride near the Sangamon River not too long ago, and I felt like there was a couple of spots where I maybe could have walked across it. Maybe not quite, but pretty close. We need to take a break. I want to go big picture after the break. But Andrew, maybe I'll go to you. What are the sort of non-obvious things you'll be watching for with the weather this fall?
Well, Trent really hit on it. I mean, the big story is going to be, can we get an active pattern to come in here before, you know, again, we go back to look at what are the typical patterns here. As we look at El Nino going deeper into the winter, it's typically associated with a more mild winter in the Midwest, but also a drier pattern in the Midwest. So again, we don't know that that's what's going to happen, certainly. But with moisture in mind, big picture, a lot of eyes here are on the next several weeks. Heading into the month of October, there's some indication of a pattern flip that will bring some moisture back into the central U.S., parts of the plains and the Midwest that badly need that. So all eyes really are on the next 4 to 6 weeks. You know, can we get some moisture into some of these areas that badly need it before maybe, you know, we send the moisture once again down across the southern U.S.?
All right, we are going to take a break. Want to invite you to join our conversation at 800-222-9455. What was your experience of the weather this summer? Do you think we are ready for what is ahead? And then a little later in the program, we're going to be talking about climate resilience and our buildings, particularly the homes we live in. Are we ready for more extreme heat, more summers like the one we just experienced? We're talking in this first part of our show with Andrew Pritchard, meteorologist for Illinois Public Media and an agricultural meteorologist with Nutrien Ag Solutions, and Trent Ford, the Illinois State Climatologist. Again, 800-222-9455 to join our conversation. More to come here on the 21st show. Please stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. For 150 years, Busey has helped business owners and entrepreneurs navigate financial decisions, achieve long-term goals, and realize dreams of success. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, 800-222-9455 to join our conversation today. The first part of our program, we're doing our entire show on climate today. In a few minutes, we'll be talking about climate resilience when it comes to our built environment, especially the homes we live in. Are we prepared for what is coming in the decades ahead? But we're starting the show reflecting on this wild weather of the summer we just lived through. We're talking with Andrew Pritchard, meteorologist for Illinois Public Media, our home station. He's also an ag meteorologist with Nutrien Ag Solutions, and Trent Ford, the Illinois State Climatologist, who's going to be with us throughout the entire program today. And just to wrap up this first part of our conversation, Trent, big picture, when you and I, and I've talked with other climate scientists about these sort of issues, we always say it's impossible or inaccurate to attribute any one weather event to climate change. But when you look back on that dust storm and the derecho, and, you know, a bunch of us were without power for a week, and the heat and the wildfire smoke that kept a lot of us indoors for days at a time, what are we measuring the right things in terms of what we're looking at? Do we need a sort of hybrid meteorological climate economic analysis? You know, at what point can we look back and say the weight of the evidence is, you know, that this is something real and something we really need to take more seriously? Or are we just going to continue having this debate as we cook and get blown around year after year?
Yeah, no, I think that having that debate of how much we can attribute, you know, an individual weather event, extreme weather event, like a dust storm, for example, or drought or anything like that. I mean, it has its scientific purposes, but it definitely, we can sit there and argue sort of arranging chairs in the Titanic, so to speak. So I think from these sorts of events, what we need to understand is, yes, the state of the science of how much are we expecting? How much have things changed? How much we're expecting things to change as far as the frequency, the intensity, and the duration of something like a heat wave or a derecho, for example. And in some cases, those signals are quite strong. And we can kind of move beyond the discussion of how much of this derecho was due to climate change and just say there is this connection. And we can learn also from these events that we are having and these types of summers like what we had this year, where we were just getting bombarded with these different types of extreme weather events. We haven't even talked about the, you know, the 8 inches of rain that fell in 12 hours in parts of the Chicagoland area earlier this summer. And learning from these events and you know, basically testing the system to say, where is it that we are most vulnerable? Where is it that we see the least resilience to these types of events? And then combining that with the projections to say, with things like extreme heat, for example, we are very likely going to see more of these types of events. So how well did we fare this year? Where did things fall down? Where did things, the emergency management plans, preparedness, and what parts of urban and rural environments didn't do as well as others. So, you know, it's a nuanced discussion, and I think your point's well taken that we really shouldn't be bogged down in this discussion of, okay, how much was this event due to climate change? The idea being that we're going to see more of these types of events, especially when it comes to extreme heat. What do we need to do to make sure that we're less, hopefully less vulnerable to those in incoming decades?
Andrew, this is not an idea original to me. I think I first heard it on a Slate Politics podcast over the summer. But, you know, the idea was this might be the coolest summer we have for the rest of our lives. I mean, there, you know, maybe a little variation here and there. But I mean, how would you rate the odds, Andrew, that a young person today may look back almost fondly on summer 2023 and think of this weather as mild by comparison?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fun joke to make, I guess. Yeah, this is the I've seen it framed another way, too. Like, oh, this is the hottest summer of our life, the hottest summer of your life so far. And, you know, the truth is, yeah, we're going to see, you know, probably more of these stretches of extreme heat. But as we kind of discussed earlier in the year, we had two bouts of really extreme heat and humidity across the Midwest in what was otherwise, you know, a year that finished just maybe a slight tick over the average mark. And then you think back to some of the years that we've had, you know, over the last 10 to 15, where maybe the weather pattern is such that we've got this persistent upper level low across the Great Lakes. We saw this. You have to go back to 2009. It was an extremely cool summer across the Midwest. We had a lot of days with high temperatures in the 70s. So I would not go so far to say that, you know, this is going to be the coolest summer and each one is going to get progressively hotter. I think it's fair to say we'll, you know, be dealing with these, you know, maybe 7, 10, 14 day long blocks of, you know, really extreme heat and humidity, but we'll still have our cool summers mixed in there, and we'll still have some variability, even if the trend line is certainly moving in the hotter direction overall.
All right. Andrew Pritchard, thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st show.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.